Ladies and gentlemen, the coffee cups are full and the cereal bowls are empty. That can only mean one thing.
It's morning.
It's time for your morning tradition, and the accordions are playing. Yes. Happy days are here again. Magnificat Radio at magnificatmedia.com with your morning tradition. Mike and Lisa Austin here, where we are
living our faith.
Thank
Good
you
morning.
For being part of our day. Thanks for tuning in. I say tune in, but I mean click on.
And click in.
Click in. Tune on, click in, whatever. Welcome to Thursday. It's weekend eve. We almost hit a Friday the 13th. We dodged it by one day. It's Thursday, August the 13th.
Thank God for that.
So there you go. And we welcome you to our little soiree here this morning. Yes, I spoke French. Soiree. Thank you, because we had French accordions there going on. All right, let's see. What are we going to talk about today? We've got we have a guest on from up in the Adirondack Mountains of New York, and this man does an art form that is vanishing quickly. And I beg you, dads, teach your sons. My dad taught me, and I was never as good at it as he is or was.
Your dad.
Yeah, and yeah. I will explain that. And our guest. Lawrence Spinnick, which is just a cool name, too.
Yes, it is.
I'm old Lawrence Spinnick, and I'm in the Adirondacks. And you will love this guy. Trust me.
Yeah.
He's coming up. And then later on, Lisa, you had something you wanted to touch on about religious instruction of the kids.
Right.
In an article you were reading, and what are we getting at here?
Right. Well, it talks about religious instructions and child neglect, how they go hand in hand.
Whoa.
It's an article by Father Bruciani.
I love it already.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's another Catholic conference coming up. There's a lot of Catholic conferences these days. The Angelus Conference on the way. In September will be the Catholic Identity Conference 2015. The theme is the three R's of modernism. Recognize it, refute it, and return to tradition.
Well, there you go.
Our friend John Venere will be on with us tomorrow, and so maybe we can ask him a little bit more about that.
Oh, that would be great.
Michael Matt's also going to be one of their guest speakers.
Mm-hmm.
John Rao.
Mm-hmm.
Louis Verrecchio. Am I saying his name right?
I believe so.
We know somebody who knows him, and I think he would be somebody good to get on.
Absolutely.
Our friend Jim Vogel will be there as well. This will be at the Wharton Holiday Inn in Wharton, West Virginia. So anyway, so that's coming up in September, and maybe we can. I bring that up because John Venere is going to be on with us, like I said, tomorrow.
Soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tomorrow, into the weekend, and I thought maybe we'd just ask him about that. So there you go. A couple of quick news items. What's going on with the gas prices? They were going down. Now they're going up.
I know, because you were telling me they were supposed to go down.
Here in southern, ladies and gentlemen, southern Wisconsin, we were paying like $2.45 the other day, which is cheap.
And we were like told, $2.42.
I think we made mention, it said, get ready for $2 gas.
That's right.
By Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we go by the gas station, it was $2.79 this afternoon.
Right.
What happened there? Well,
maybe the bombing in China or whatever happened there.
Was it a bombing or was it just an explosion?
There was an explosion.
It was in
of
a
some
refinery
sort.
Or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Maybe I'll look into that. Here's a little something for you. Speaking of gas, a new report says hackers in the Middle East could take control of gas pumps by cyber attack, because they're all computerized now, you know.
Oh.
So there you go.
And how would that work? Does it explain?
Trend Micro set up fake gas stations and pumps and found that hackers from Syria and Iran could breach them and change their settings.
Oh.
Syrian Electronic Army has hacked into gas stations in the Middle East. And he says they were able to change passwords, essentially holding the station's gas at ransom, for ransom.
Oh, that's how they do it.
We're putting way too much. Well, too late for that. We've already put way too much into the internet. So
yes, we have.
Pull that back a little bit. Remember the good old days?
Yeah, just pump. Go up to the gas station. The guy comes out and pumps your gas.
And there's another guy that had a uniform. We were talking about the milkman the other day. We are
right.
Old. Lisa, we are so old.
I'm not old. You're old.
Okay, thank you. That was one of your first jobs. You could be the gas pump kid. And that back when you knew how to make change, remember the guys used
right,
to wear?
Like, ding, ding.
I love telling the kids today about when you used to wear the change maker on your belt.
Uh-huh.
Somebody would hand you money, you'd go, chick, 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 here's your, and by the way, did I get your window good for you, sir? Okay, thank you. And sometimes you'd get a tip. And that was nice.
Why, you were one of them?
briefly.
Oh.
And remember when the word hacker, by the way, hacker.
Yeah.
We're talking hacker. Everybody's hacking now. Hackers.
Yeah.
I remember when hacker was grandpa after he came up a flight of stairs.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? All right. Just a little attempt at humor, ladies and gentlemen. A little early weekend humor before the weekend. How about that? All righty. So, Lawrence Spinnick is going to be on with us in just a moment, and we're going to talk about the ancient art of... Should I give it up, or should I... Okay, the ancient art of whittling. Lawrence Spinnick is a master whittler, and he makes his home in the mountains in the Adirondacks of New York State.
He does beautiful work.
Unbelievable. And I want to ask him how he does it.
And detailed.
And so I was put onto his name and given information through a friend of a friend of a friend, one of those deals. Called the guy, very personable, couldn't wait to come on. And in fact, said he has sent a couple of gifts for us in the mail.
Yep.
Hand-carved gifts. So we're looking forward to that. Anyway, we're going to talk with Lawrence Spinnick. We're going to talk whittling. We're going to talk home. Well, not homeschooling so much, but yes, the religious instruction coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, Lisa.
Yes, what?
It is my pleasure to ask you the question of the morning. How can you know where you're going
if you don't know where you've been?
It's this day in history.
Any day in history.
A day that will go down in history.
History of this day.
This day in history.
This day in history.
Today happens to be Thursday, August the 13th in the year of our Lord, 2015. It's 225th day of the year where there are only 140 of these things remaining, and it was on this day way back in 523, St. John the First began his reign as the Catholic Pope.
And on this day, in 1521, Spanish conquistadors under Cortes captured Aztec Emperor...
Go ahead.
Cuauhtémoc.
Good job. Oh, you got it.
Marking the end of the Aztec Empire.
I was so...
You do this on purpose, don't you?
I kind of do now. I do, yeah.
Because I've been making so many goof-ups.
I was trying to trip Lisa up. You nailed it, honey.
Woo-hoo.
You really did that. The Aztec guy. 1792, revolutionaries imprisoned French royals, including Marie Antoinette, and out came the guillotine, and we all know what happened after that.
Off with their head!
Oh, boy.
Anyway, on this day in 1889, William Gray patents coin-operated telephone.
Yeah, the coin-operated telephone.
That's remember, right.
Okay, now let's talk our age. First of all, that you remember a coin-operated telephone, because they don't have those anymore, I don't think.
I don't believe they do.
Secondly... What is the cheapest you ever remember a coin-operated phone costing?
10 cents?
Yep, a dime. That's what I remember. I remember that, too. 1923, the U.S. Steel Corporation initiated the 8-hour workday on this day in history.
And on this day in 1942...
Yes.
1942,
mm-hmm.
Disney's Bambi opened at Radio City Music Hall in New York City.
Bambi!
Do you know that story still makes me cry to this day?
Really?
It really does.
Bambi's mom buys a ranch, doesn't she?
Yeah, right. It's so sad.
1961, this is the day in history that the border between East and West Berlin was closed and marked with that big barbed wire fence. Lots of footage of that and things like that. And today is International Left-Handers Day. Lefties, we salute you. And now
salute.
You know exactly where it is.
It'd be for my brother and
you
Therese.
Have been. Yes, and that's your day in history. On Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com. Mike and Lisa Austin. This is our little show called Your Morning Tradition, and we are going to come back and talk whittling. Grab yourself a sharp knife and don't cut yourself.
That's right.
This is the age-old manly art of whittling. Dads, teach your sons to do this, and we're going to talk to Lawrence Spinnick all about what whittling's all about up next on Your Morning Tradition, where we are
living our faith.
Spinnick.
Right.
Just like spinach, only with an ack.
There you got it.
I love it. We're going out to the Adirondacks in Gloversville. How big is Gloversville?
Well, at one time, it was around 25,000. It was the glove-making capital in the world, actually, until its demise in about 1950. Now it's down to about 14,000.
I got you. Well, it's not it is a small town, but not, you know, there are smaller, I suppose. But I wanted to talk to you because... I was thinking about whittling. It's a manly thing to do, and for me, a fatherly thing to do, a dadly thing, because my dad used to carve little stuff, and it wasn't extremely intricate, not near like the stuff you do.
Yes.
How long you been? Yes. Now, you're, can I say your age?
Yeah, sure.
All right. 72. How long you been whittling?
Since I was about 12 or 14. I started right here, about two blocks from where we are right now, making little clay figures, and that's where it started.
Wow. And so you've whittled nonstop ever since then. And whittling is kind of a dying, I guess you'd call it an art, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, and it's not dying. That word should be taken out of your description. It
really?
Is blooming. It is booming. When I started to get serious in about 64, there were maybe three books out. Now it's just proliferated. There are book after subject. It's flourishing, big deal.
So how come you don't see guys whittling?
Yeah, it used to be you would see guys in a park or something whittling.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see that anymore, Lawrence.
Well, it does happen. It does happen here, but generally they ask us to come to fairs and come together. There's an apple orchard not far from here. This guy's been dying for years to get me and the guys to come over and just sit there and whittle while people come in the fall and October to buy the delicious New York State apples that he raises. And we carve at a senior center every Thursday and a guy's house every Tuesday. And we sit outside on Tuesday in this wonderful shop this fellow has in Rotterdam, New York, about 33 miles from here. And just seven or eight of us sitting around these old benches, a picture from out of the past.
That's what I like about it, is because I always picture exactly that picture. Or else Jed Clampett sitting out front of the mansion, you know, he was always carving on something. So making something for Jethro, I guess. But that's the thing about whittling, is it's a slow process. It's a relaxed process. I would think it's very relaxing for you, right?
It is. It is. It's more, and it's funny you should ask, because I carve these little people, and they're no fun. But I'm looking at something right now that I do, which is a little few inches big, and it's a log, an axe sitting into a log, like you would take an axe and throw it into a log. Mm-hmm. And it's made out of one piece of wood, which is very strange to look at, because the axe handle is very tiny. And this thing is sticking up. I get more pleasure out of doing that or a ball in a cage, the thing that you're familiar with, better than these intricate and the sought-after figures of mine, yes.
How long does it take you to do one of those, say, little figure, the little ball in the cage, for instance? How long does it take you on one of those?
Well, maybe an hour and a half.
Really?
But my other carvings that are only maybe 2 inches tall, they take 4 or 5 hours to maybe carve four, paint one. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of time. And I went through a box of my stuff the other day, which I have boxes of them, and I don't even recall carving them. They don't mean anything to me. But I do give them away to kids, yeah, and people that come to visit when we have a show or something. We have one in October. Some kid comes up, or a grown-up, so male or female, and they get fascinated by seeing a little ball in the cage. Well, then I'll give them one.
No,
and I get more pleasure out of giving them. I don't sell. A lot of guys sell. In fact, they judge their own work on how much they can get for it, and I don't do that, because when I give something to somebody, the smile that comes on their face, you just can't put a price on it.
Well, that's what I like about your site, whittling.com. You just give your stuff away. And I mentioned that whittling to me is very fatherly, because my dad, who was, he worked at remodeling homes. He was a carpenter and stuff like that. And he would take me as a kid with him. And during a break, he'd pick up like a 2x4, a little chunk of wood. Next thing you know, I got a toy gun. Or I've got a little, I think he made like a helicopter kind of thing one time. And I remember that. And just little things like that. And then he would hand it to me. To me, it was, I'm sure it was for him, the look on my face when he handed me this thing he just made. And that's what that's all about. You know, it's that connection between father, son, father and daughter for me when I think of whittling. Do you have any kids, Lawrence?
Oh, yeah, they're grown. They're grown, but they haven't taken up that hobby. It's like anything else with my father. When my father used to make things also, but not like I do, but I inherited his ability to use my hands.
Mm-hmm.
He made things and built things and worked with his hands, and I have those genes, I guess, from him. That allows me to take a knife and create these subjects that people seem to like very much.
Yeah. And what were your kids like when you, I'm sure all your life and them growing up, they probably still have some of the stuff you carved for them and you just hand them it. You know?
Oh, yes. Yes, they do. And I've made many of their toys. wooden toys. There was, unfortunately, a company that went out of business. It was in New Jersey. I'm talking back in the 60s. And they used to put out a catalog, and they used to give me dimensions. The foolish thing for them to do is to give me dimensions of a little box that is a toy for kids that have hinges, various hinges and various catches on them. Mm-hmm. Because once they gave me a picture and they gave me the dimensions, I would make it for my kids, and I'd buy them from them.
Now, you carry around a pocket knife with you, ready to whittle at a moment's notice, I suppose?
Well, I carry knives because I'm from the old days when a knife was able to be carried. Today, you can get into trouble if you carry a knife, but yeah. I do. But in the car, I have a little plastic box with several pieces of wood, my carving glove for safety, and the carving thing that goes on my thumb for safety. I'm a safety nut. Mm-hmm. And I do have several knives in there. And like I told you, I was going to go to this lake this afternoon, and I will, too, since it's early enough. And I'll sit out there and carve.
That's outstanding. Yeah, you can still carry a pocket knife, can't you? I think you could.
I know, but people look at you very strangely in some instances, or either that or I'm paranoid.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, I could see that if somebody has like a box of, boy, I wish I had something to cut this tape, and then you whip out your pocket knife. In this day and age, people go, whoa, what are you doing?
Yeah,
used to be every guy would carry a pocket knife around, though. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh,
that's,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what
I have two in my pocket.
Well, you have big pockets. Hey, we're talking with Lawrence Spinnock. He's out in the God's country in the Adirondacks of New York.
Would you consider yourself a master whittler?
No, I don't like that word master. A lot of guys take that on. A master is some craft back in the old days where you had to go through a program. You had to go through a formal school.
Right.
You had to go up before the masters to get accepted into, like, the guilds and things. Mm-hmm. And then you were issued a master's certificate. No, I am not a master. I'm a whittler. That's
all right. Well, wouldn't you agree that a guy who is a dad, and you do, these days it seems like we have very little time to spend with the kids and in our own lives. Whittling, just if you can take it up as a hobby, is a way to really make yourself slow down and do something worthwhile, that you're making something, you're creating something, which is what we do as guys. You know, wouldn't you think that this, I think everyone should try and whittle.
Well, you described it perfectly, I think, because my stuff is so small that I need magnifying glasses attached to my glasses. And when I'm in that world, I'm just taking that tip of that knife and I'm creating a facial expression. And it's just sitting there. I'm in my own world. I've zeroed down to practically no space around me, just what's 6 inches from my nose. And, yes, it does put you into a different world, a very relaxing world, and you do create something, whether it's a what you might call a masterpiece of work or a ball in a box. It's creating something. And when you give that something to somebody that you made with your own hands, it just elevates it even higher than what it is.
That's fantastic. Lawrence Spinnock, you're kind of a poet, I think, too. You don't sell any of your stuff, and I think that's very commendable. Well, you're a heck of a guy, and good luck to you at the lake today.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for calling and having this interview. Maybe some people will pick up on it, male or female, young or old, and will pick up a knife, and you can get started with about an $18 knife and a nice piece of basswood. It's got to be basswood.
Oh, yeah, it's easy to work with. Yeah, nice soft wood.
Yeah, not balsa wood, basswood.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Lawrence, have a great day.
Mike, thank you very, very much. Good luck to you on your program and to your audience.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Lawrence Spinnock.
Mm-hmm. He's a great guy.
He's not a master.
No, he's not.
He's just a whittler.
Mm-hmm.
Basswood. I want to get me some basswood now.
Yeah.
All right. We're
that
gonna
was
get
really interesting.
Yeah. I can't wait. He's sending stuff to us, so I can't wait for it. Well, I guess I have to wait for it, can't I? It doesn't matter what I want, Lisa.
That's right.
Sometimes we just have to.
Patience is a virtue.
Thank you very much. It's Mike and Lisa Austin here on Your Morning Tradition. And we welcome you to Weekend Eve, your Thursday morning. We're going to get back here and talk a little education of our children's here on Magnificat Radio. Why do I always do a voice? Why do I always do that?
It's just you.
Okay. MagnificaMedia.com. Religious instruction. Is
coming
it your
up next.
It's your responsibility. Anyway, Lisa's got a great article on that. We'll go to next. Your morning tradition, Mike and Lisa Austin, where we are living our faith.